Give you guys time to get back and get your cameras turned back on if you need to. Right, here we go. Now we're going to talk about listening to your body. I love talking about this. So, what the fuck does that actually mean? Right? I was on Instagram for a really long time hearing influencers, listen to your body, just listen to your body. And I was literally like, what does that even mean? Like, what are you talking about? So, when our experience of the sensations and symptoms of our bodies is uncomfortable, painful, even anxiety inducing, it is only natural to want to pull away from it and to disconnect. We learn to disconnect from our bodies and retreat into our minds. We're trying to think our way out of our feelings. Seems like it makes sense, except it doesn't work. And as Dr. Russ Kennedy says, he's the author of the book Anxiety RX. He's the Anxiety MD on Instagram. He says you can't think your way out of a feeling problem. So our cognitively driven culture reinforces this disconnection from our bodies because it praises intellectualism and reason over felt sense. It praises science over intuition. And so we are collectively a disembodied people. When we learn to feel and notice sensation in the body with curiosity and not fear, that's when we're listening to our bodies. So all sensation happens through the electrical signals that travel up and down the nervous system. Your nervous system is basically like the electrical wiring of your body. Some sensations alert us to take care of our basic needs. For example, when you are hungry, it is because you have felt a sensation that says, hey, it's time to eat. When you are thirsty, it's because you have felt a sensation that's like, hey, you're thirsty. You need to take a drink. When you're sleepy, you have a sensation that says, hey, it's time to go to bed. When you need to pee, you have a sensation that's like, oh, I need to use the bathroom, right? So you do know how to listen to your body if you can feel hunger, thirst, sleepiness, and the need to pee. But those are basic needs sensations. Those sensations are your body going, hey, it's been a long time since I've eaten. Blood sugar is getting low. I need some fuel. I need some calories. You know, crank up the volume on whatever your hunger sensation is so that you can go meet that need, right? That's a basic need. But some sensations are connected to emotions. For example, if your face flushes really hot, that might be what you associated with the feeling of embarrassment or humiliation. If you get a lump in your throat, that might be your sensation that your body is like, hey, I'm feeling anxious because you're about to like speak publicly, or you have something you need to say and you're not saying it. If you get tension in your neck, that may be your body going, hey, I'm feeling a little stressed because I have this deadline that's upcoming and I got a bunch of shit I got to get done. Interoception is a sense like smell, sight, hearing, taste, touch, and proprioception. Interoception is the sense of noticing and feeling sensation in the body. So, sensation is how the body speaks, and interoception is how we listen to our bodies. The trap of the mind and the ego, however, is to assign meaning to sensation, to create stories about it, to pathologize certain sensations, i.e., symptoms. And to make them bad. And when we believe these mind-made stories, especially if we're not in awareness of those stories, we can become afraid of feeling sensation. Before we begin reestablishing a connection with our bodies, I believe that it is crucial for us to understand why the connection was severed in the first place. So, when our needs for connection, love, and secure attachment were not met by our parents, we did not have the consciousness to realize that that disconnect was not our fault. We internalized the disconnect and the lack of secure attachment as a fundamental flaw within ourselves. You were not conscious that you were doing this when you did this. Okay. This is not something that you will be able to think back and go, oh, yeah, I remember that day when I was six. That's the day that I realized that the reason my parents weren't giving me the love I needed was because there was something wrong with me. Like, you will not have conscious memory of this process happening because it happened as a process, not in a moment. Then our egos develop the voice or voices in our heads, our little parts that worry and keep us ruminating and overthinking, trying to figure out why and what's wrong with us. So mind chatter is the ego's way of trying to protect us by telling stories that match the state of the nervous system. So if you've ever heard the phrase story follows state, that's where this comes from. Our thoughts are a reflection of the state of our nervous system. I bet you if you've ever felt really regulated and peaceful and safe, your thoughts are probably not like, right? Because your nervous system isn't in that chaotic state. But when your nervous system is in a chaotic state, your thoughts reflect that. So the voice in our head is constantly confirming what we feel, but we are too afraid to actually feel. Reconnecting with the body is a practice of noticing the voice in the head, noticing the stories, and choosing to drop into the body to notice the sensations that are present without believing the ego stories. So the ego stories are allowed to be there. The goal is not to get rid of them. We're not trying to get rid of the voice in our heads. That's not even possible. So the goal is to be able to notice the stories and notice the sensation and let the two be separate without attaching the meaning or the story to the sensation. So we connect to the body over and over and over until we are literally walking around in our bodies instead of in our heads. And this is what it means to be embodied. If you've ever wondered what the term embodied means, it means that you're feeling whatever is present. You are allowing whatever you're feeling, even and especially when they're uncomfortable. You feel, you allow, you stay present with what is there. You are walking around in your body. You are not walking around in your head all the time. While feeling, allowing, and staying present, you can notice the voice in your head with curiosity. You get curious instead of believing the stories as fact or truth. You notice how the thoughts feed the sensations of the body, perhaps even intensifying the sensation. Does everyone know what I mean when I say your thoughts are feeding the sensations of your body? Have you had the experience where you can think a thought and it lights up somewhere in your body? And like, if you're a catastrophizer, you might have like some random thought out of nowhere, like, oh my God, what if my kid dies today? And like, as soon as that random thought comes into your head, what do you feel? You feel anxiety in your body, right? Okay. So thoughts feed sensations in the body and can intensify sensations. That's another reason why it's so fucking important to be in awareness of our thoughts. If the sensation feels contracted and uncomfortable, you can offer breath to those places. So you can place your hand on that part of yourself. You can hold the part of yourself that has fear, that has discomfort, and repeat, repeat, repeat. You guys, we've talked about this since our first workshop, right? You notice what's present in your body. You see if you can describe the sensation. You place your hand wherever it is, just as a loving presence to yourself, and you notice the voice in your head and the stories that it's making, and you repeat and you repeat. Eventually, you will come to know what your body needs, but first you must listen. And if you have been very disconnected from your body for a very long time, then you can't just be like, okay, body, I'm listening. What do you need? Like, hurry up, right? Like your body, you have to develop a relationship of trust with your body again. So without conscious awareness, our only option is to be unconscious of these mind-made ego stories. And this results in fear, catastrophization, hypervigilance, and even dissociation from the body. When it comes to our triggers, the mind tells stories such as, oh, I could never face that. It's too painful. And I've always avoided that. It's just the way I am, right? Those are stories too. The mind tells the story that the body is a painful, uncomfortable place to be. The mind may even have a story that your body has betrayed you. I definitely had that story. Like my story for a very long time was I've given you all this organic food. I've given you all this clean beauty products and I've taken all the chemicals out of everything and you're still fucking misbehaving. Like that was my story with my body for a very long time. Believing the stories or not being conscious of them forces us into disembodiment. We are disconnected from our bodies. We're living in our minds all the time. We're thinking and thinking, but rarely feeling. So connecting with the body requires being willing to notice and feel the sensations while also noticing the stories of the mind with curiosity instead of judgment or unquestioning belief. With practice, we can learn to notice sensation, feel it, and then cognitively describe it with language. We've done that some here, but I always repeat because repetition gets it into your subconscious. Our bodies do not speak with cognitive language. The language of our body is sensation and sometimes symptoms. Interoception is how we listen, and we can talk back to our bodies through presence, holding ourselves, meeting our basic needs, and nervous system hygiene. Those are all ways to talk back to your body. Because just like your body doesn't talk with words, your body also doesn't really respond to words. This is why mantras and affirmations don't work. Especially if you're feeling unsafe and you're like, I am safe, I am safe, I am safe. Like, no, you're fucking not. Your body's like, no, bitch, you're not. Like, all the alarm bells are going off and you're like chanting, I am safe, I am safe. And you're like, no, you're not, right? So your body doesn't respond to words. If you have a sensation or symptom that's concerning to you, it is okay to get checked out by your doctor. I would recommend that you get it checked out. It's always great to rule it out. But if everything medically checks out, then the sensation or symptom is likely your body speaking to you and you're interocepting it and attaching a story such as, oh, this must be really bad. I'm sure something's really wrong with me. What if it's a mystery illness? What if nobody ever figures it out? What if I feel this forever? Or like whatever the story is, right? The fear that gets attached to the sensation. Sensations and symptoms are sometimes really uncomfortable. It is totally understandable that in our like egoic thought voice in our head, we want to avoid, fix, reject, get rid of it. But that's unrealistic because you're in a body. As long as you are alive in your human body, sensations and symptoms are going to be part of your experience. So what if instead of avoiding your body and judging your body and trying to fix your body and micromanage your body and control your body and pathologize your body, what if you learn to listen and not be afraid of what you feel? Now we'll talk about overcoming health anxiety. So as I mentioned earlier, overcoming health anxiety is not about getting rid of symptoms. Can you hold painful, uncomfortable sensations without reacting? Can you change the energy with which you approach your healthcare? Can you slow down, reduce urgency and panic, and get more calm and grounded? Can you accept and surrender and stop resisting whatever is present in your body? Are you able to be present and curious with a voice in your head? Are you reorienting your relationship to your body toward pleasure instead of pain? We're going to talk a lot more about this. So first, awareness and curiosity about your typical unconscious health anxiety coping behaviors or whatever your anxiety coping behaviors are if you don't have health anxiety, but you experience some other form of anxiety. Replace your coping mechanisms with conscious nervous system hygiene and connecting with your body in ways that build trust. So what I mean by this is if one of your vices is to start getting on your phone and scrolling or going on Instagram or Googling or whatever, that is a coping mechanism where you are trying to seek answers or seek certainty or check out of what you're feeling. And this little rectangle you hold in your hand is so magical about letting you check out. That is an adaptive survival pattern so that you don't have to feel what's happening. When you pick this up and you start going at it, the second you come into awareness, oh, I'm doing the thing again. I felt this uncomfortable thing in my body and I immediately reached for my little phone and I started Googling for answers, or I started zoning out on Instagram, or I started watching YouTube videos or, you know, TikTok or whatever it is. You can consciously say that is not supportive for what I want in my life. I'm going to put that down and I am instead going to go do this nervous system hygiene practice over here because that will connect me with my body. This will never connect you to your body ever. If your one of your vices or your adaptive survival patterns is, let's say it's like being really restrictive with what you eat, and like you're counting your calories and you're being super restrictive and like you're healing dieting. And so you can't eat anything outside of the little box of food that you allow yourself to have because, oh my God, what if something bad happens? Like noticing like, oh, I'm doing the thing again. I'm in this fearful place about what I'm eating. And so I'm restricting. I'm going to check in with my body. I'm going to connect to my body. Like, body, is this actually supportive of you? Like, is me being this rigid with my diet actually supportive? Body's probably going to go, no, bitch, it's not. Like, no, like, thank you for trying to support me that way, but actually it's okay to have cookie, right? Yeah. So having awareness and curiosity about your adaptive survival patterns, replacing those with something conscious that connects you to your body, having awareness and curiosity about the voice in your head, somatic tracking of sensations and symptoms or the fear story. I need to change this slide to say somatic listening. and then reorienting to pleasure-focused body connection. Okay. Somatic tracking is just, it's from Alan Gordon's book, The Way Out, which is a really great book. I recommend you reading if you have chronic pain, for sure. I would recommend you reading it. But the way that he does somatic tracking is by like noticing sensation and being able to describe it with feeling words, which we've done some in here, which is like, you know, I notice a sensation in my solar plexus and it feels hot and like it's twisting and I feel kind of nauseous. And like when I close my eyes and I focus on it, I see the color yellow or like whatever, like that's somatic tracking. We do that with in somatic listening, but in somatic listening, I add the step of placing your hand there as a loving presence and also noticing what the voice in your head is saying about it. And then choosing consciously something that would be supportive or something that feels light or easeful or something like that, or something that feels like pleasure, which we're going to talk about a lot. So having awareness and curiosity about your typical unconscious health anxiety behaviors and emotions, right? So here's just a few examples. If you are a doom Googler, I have a client right now who's a doom Googler. Every single time she feels something new in her body, which is like all the time right now, because she's in a really dysregulated state. Every single time she's getting on her phone and she's Googling every fucking time. And like, I don't have any attachment to what she's doing. I'm not frustrated with her. Like, I understand why she's doing what she's doing. It makes sense. She's seeking certainty. Like, it all makes sense. But I'm having to remind her because she's like, I did it again. I did it again. My ear's been ringing for 2 hours. And instead of just being present with it, I went on Google and then I booked an appointment with the ENT and then I did this. And now I'm in a panic because of it. And I'm like, okay, so you're experiencing an uncomfortable symptom. It's okay that you're experiencing this uncomfortable symptom. She's also messing with some medication right now. So my guess is that the messing with the meds is causing the ears to ring, because that's a pretty common symptom whenever you're going on or coming off of medication. So she's messing with some meds, and she's just gone up on a dosage of medication, which is probably why her ears are ringing. Simplest explanation is usually the right one. She doesn't have any other health conditions. She's very healthy. That's probably the most likely explanation. And she has an adaptive pattern of Googling. Like, as soon as she starts feeling uncertainty about something in her body, she's on the Google. And she knows that this has never once supported her. This has never once made her feel better. It has never given her the certainty that she wants. It has never given her the answers that she wants. It only ever leads to more anxiety. And so she did it again today. And what I had to tell her is like, you're allowed to choose the adaptive survival pattern. You're totally allowed to choose it. You are allowed to choose to Google. You're allowed to choose to go on Facebook groups and seek certainty. You're allowed to catastrophize about your health or your relationship or your finances or whatever. Like, you are allowed to do that, right? You are a sovereign, autonomous adult. You are allowed to do these things. However, if you say that you want to heal anxiety, then doing things that cause anxiety is not supportive of the outcome you want, right? So if you have awareness when you're doom Googling, right? Bring in the magical curiosity question. What purpose is this serving for me? If you're seeking certainty, if you're Googling or looking on Instagram or TikTok or whatever to seek certainty for your issue, what purpose is this serving for me? Am I finding what I'm looking for here? Or is this just creating more angst? If your health is a frequent topic of conversation, like, I think we all know these people, maybe you are this person, this is not intended to be a criticism, but we all know people who every time you get together with them, everything they talk about is all their health struggles that they're going through. What is that doing for you? Like, really? If you like the attention, okay, acknowledge that you like the attention, right? But it's not actually helping the health problem, which is what you're really wanting. All right, so replacing unconscious coping mechanisms with conscious nervous system hygiene and other self-trust building coping skills. For my clients who have health anxiety, we try to implement a strict no Google policy. doesn't always work because I am dealing with full grown adults who have 24/7 access to the internet, right? But we try to replace that with nervous system hygiene, maybe like some tapping, somatic tracking, going outside, breath work, or pleasure. Leaving Facebook groups or unfollowing Instagram accounts, especially like Instagram accounts or Facebook groups that make you feel more hypervigilant, that make you like make checklists of your symptoms and be like, oh my God, I have every single one of those. I probably have a cortisol imbalance or whatever. Replace that, because that's not actual community. That's not providing co-regulation. Replace that with a safe person or two that you can share with when you're feeling unsafe in your body, and they can provide you with co-regulation. Because if it makes you feel better for the person on Instagram to be like, oh, you're experiencing this symptom, you're not alone, you probably have this, that's giving you some level of feeling better or feeling seen or feeling heard or feeling understood. But it's not actually supporting you, because that person doesn't know you and you don't know them. It would be more supportive to have a trusted person or two, and you can be like, hey, I'm experiencing this and it's really hard and it feels really uncomfortable. And they can be like, yeah, that makes sense. I believe you. I believe that's hard for you. How can I support you? What do you need? Right? The person on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok or whatever, they cannot do that for you. If talking about your health issues is one way you attempt to get certainty, answers, control, attention, et cetera, replace that with boundaries with yourself and others regarding conversations and questions about health. So my friend Mark has a pretty advanced Lyme's disease, has had it for 20 plus years. He is pretty much always in a state of having something, whether it's like jittering and shaking or brain fog, or like his Lyme's has never been able to be healed. He's like one of those very rare people that his body didn't respond to antibiotics and all the protocols and things. And so he's had very bad Lyme's disease for like 20 plus years. And in the beginning of our friendship, every time I would see him, how are you feeling today? Are you still shaky? Are you still jittery? And he had to set a boundary with me and say, you know, I really don't want my health to be a topic of our conversation. Like, I'm pretty much always really tired, or I'm always really brain foggy, or I'm always jittering or whatever. And like, I've learned to live my life with it. I don't let it get in the way of things as much as possible. And I really just don't want it to be like a focus of our time together. So he set a boundary with me about it. And I really appreciate that. So if you're someone who talks about your health a lot, and that has become one of your adaptive survival patterns, then like, you may need to have boundaries with yourself about like, okay, I'm not going to bring up my health conditions whenever I'm chatting with this friend today. Or if they ask you about it, you can be like, you know, actually, I need to set a boundary about that. I'm really trying to get away from talking about my health all the time. It's become too much of a focus for me. It actually creates more anxiety. Can we please talk about something else instead? If frequently checking in with your body is a way of maintaining control, certainty, or staying ahead of symptoms, you can replace that with awareness of the checking in and maybe a helpful mantra. Like, this is a time when a mantra is helpful if it's actually true. Okay. Of like, I'm checking in and like, oh, okay. I'm like noticing the symptom, but I'm okay right now. Even though this is uncomfortable, I am okay. I can still go for a walk. I can still, you know, go enjoy a show. I can still make dinner. I can still play with my kids or my dog, whatever. Like, bringing focus and attention to what you are able to do, instead of all the focus and attention being on the symptom or the sensation and what it may be preventing you from doing. If it's a story in your head and it's not actually preventing you, like it's not an actual disability or something like that. You will fall back into old unconscious coping strategies. You will Google again. You will want to seek certainty again. You will probably return to the Facebook group in a moment of desperation. All you can do is have boundaries with yourself about this and give yourself a lot of grace. And like, it makes sense, right? I understand. I believe this is hard for you. You might even have to tell your little inner child, like, I believe you, and I believe this is hard for you, and it makes sense. You have not failed if you do these things. Like, everyone repeats their adaptive survival patterns, including me. I was the weird symptom that I was having that I told David, oh, I wonder what I did to cause this. I definitely fucking Googled about it, okay? I definitely did. And as soon as I caught myself, I was like, what are you doing, Lindsay? Stop. Like, stop. You know that way lies madness. You know you don't want to go down that rabbit hole. So you can just remind yourself, I am learning. This is a deeply ingrained pattern of anxiety and certainty seeking that I am finding my way out of. It makes sense that I do these things when I'm feeling unsafe. At any time, I can consciously choose to redirect, right? At any time, you can consciously choose to redirect. The voice in your head gets off on shaming you as a failure or like you're never going to heal when you go back into these unconscious patterns. It happens with everyone. Like they start feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm figuring it out. Like I communicated a boundary and I didn't die. Or like I like didn't Google the health thing and the sensation just resolved on its own in a couple of days. Oh my gosh, I did it. And then they repeat it and then they're like, oh, I was doing so good and now I'm doing so bad and I'm never going to heal. I'm never going to stop doing this. I'm never like, that always and never like eternity language. So just remember, like if that voice in your head is shaming you or I'm never going to heal or whatever, no real or lasting change can come from that place. It's not going to create what you want. You cannot shame yourself out of health anxiety. You cannot shame yourself out of any kind of anxiety, but you can love yourself through anxiety and you can hold boundaries with yourself through anxiety. And you can remind yourself, even whenever you fall back into an adaptive pattern, that you're learning and you're repatterning something. Just bring awareness to the shaming critical voice in your head. Notice it curiously. Again, you don't have to listen to it or believe it. So now let's talk about awareness and curiosity about the voices in your head. The reason we judge is because we are attached. We are attached to a story, a belief, an outcome, an identity, a diagnosis, a relationship, a number in our bank account, a number on the scale, whatever it is that we're attached to something. That's why we judge. Unless we are aware of our attachments and judgments and can meet those attachments with non-judgmental curiosity, we will continue in our patterns and stay stuck. The stories that we tell ourselves about the things are usually much more harmful than the things themselves. So the things being the symptom, the sensation, the relationship, the trigger, the appointment, the feeling, the emotion, whatever. The story that you're telling yourself about that thing is usually more harmful than the thing itself. And the voices in our heads are tricky because they are very believable. And we all have the life experience to prove that what the voices in our head is saying is actually true, right? Like we wouldn't have the voices in our heads if we hadn't had the experience that actually happened before that created the fear that then created the adaptation to try to avoid the fear. So this is why awareness is non-negotiable. We have to be aware of these voices before we can question or challenge them. Curiosity is the antidote to judgment. So again, when we're talking specifically about the body or sensations that you may be experiencing, isn't it interesting that the voice in my head is saying, Nicole, to speak to you from what you said earlier, like, isn't it interesting that the voice in my head is saying that my constant fatigue means I have thyroid cancer, right? Isn't that interesting? What meaning am I making out of this sensation or this symptom? Is this sensation or symptom actually a problem? Or is there a voice in my head that's scared and trying to convince me there's a problem? Can I be open to the possibility that this sensation isn't an indication of a problem in my physiology, but is instead my body speaking to me about some unfelt emotions? The voices in your head are not bad or wrong. They are a part of you. They're allowed to be there. They just can't be allowed to take over. That's your highest self's job. You can't reject them or get rid of the voices as much as you might want to. You are not a victim of the voices in your head. You also are not a victim of health anxiety or any other kind of anxiety. You are not a victim of your own body. You may not have had awareness of the voices in your head before now, and that's okay. Like everyone has to wake up at some point. So if you're just waking up to the fact that you have a voice in your head that you don't have to listen to, that's pretty normal and that's okay. So I need to change this slide to say somatic listening, not tracking. So somatic listening to feel without fear. So with health anxiety, the voice is always telling a story of fear. With any anxiety, the voice in your head is always telling a story of fear. There's a fear of death, a fear of suffering, a fear of loss, a fear of loss of life or quality of life or ability, fear that whatever is going on with you isn't curable, fear of aging, fear of the healing journey, fear of being a burden to others, fear of being alone in your condition, fear of pain, fear of mystery illness, fear of running out of money before you can pay your bills, fear of never getting another job that pays better, fear of never getting a raise, fear that your partner's going to leave you, fear that your social circle is going to ostracize you or kick you out, fear that they're going to make fun of you or talk about you behind your back. Like, all of that is anxiety, and it's always telling a story of fear. So somatic listening for health anxiety is feeling the actual sensation or symptom with complete presence and non-reactivity, and feeling the fear because the voice in your head creates stories and makes meaning out of those symptoms. Okay. So again, I need to change this to somatic listening, but since I am sharing from somatic tracking, the book is called The Way Out by Alan Gordon. And he says, we are paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. So the goal is to be present with sensation without fear. That may be hard if you've lived in fear of sensation for a long time, or if you have really big stories attached to sensation. And then we send messages of safety to the brain and body. So sending messages of safety are things like, it is safe to feel the feelings of my body. My body is not against me. This is a completely safe sensation. It's called safety reappraisal in somatic tracking, and it has been studied and proven to significantly decrease fear. So like, even right now, if you're experiencing like a weird symptom or sensation in your body, even in this moment that you can identify, like place your hand on that part of yourself and just like notice like, okay, I'm feeling this and it's uncomfortable, but like, I'm okay. Like, I'm here. I'm present. I'm doing it. And it's safe to feel this. This is my body speaking to me, and I'm just listening. So noticing the sensation and then exploring it curiously. It helps if you close your eyes so that you're able to go completely inward to feel. Get comfortable, lie or sit down if that helps, and just bring your attention to the sensation, whatever it is. Whether you have health anxiety or you don't. This is when you have any kind of anxiety, when you're depressed, when you're dissociating, when you're numb, when you're happy even. Like, let's start tracking our positive emotions, not just the uncomfortable ones. But noticing the sensation, exploring it curiously, and then describing it with feeling words. So would you describe it as hot or cold, pulsing, tingling? Is it painful? Is it tense? Does it have a color? Is it moving? Is it still? Some people, whenever they close their eyes and they see the sensation, they see it as a shape or they see it as an animal. Using feeling words is better than like, I just feel disrespected. Right? Well, how does that feel? Like, tell me what disrespected feels like in your body. Or I just feel really anxious. Okay. What does that feel like? Right? Like, we're going into the sensation and exploring it curiously. Place your hand on this area of your body if you can. This is something that I've added, which is why I need to change it from somatic tracking to somatic listening, because I've actually changed the process a bit. But it's really, really helpful if, like, wherever that part in your body is lighting up, wherever that sensation is, to just place your hand on that part of yourself as like a loving, reassuring, present part of you, your higher self, that's like just really being compassionate with your body and present with what's happening. Send messages of safety to your brain and body. So these are things like, it is safe to feel the sensations of my body. My body is not against me. My body is just communicating with me. This is a safe sensation, even if it doesn't feel safe. My nervous system is telling me something. I don't have to fix anything. I only need to listen, or like whatever feels authentic for you. And then continue noticing the sensation. And you may notice that it shifts or change. It may intensify. It may subside. It may move to a totally different part of your body. It may change colors. The sensation itself may change. Whatever happens, it's okay. Just let it do its thing. And all you have to do is notice. So you can do this for a few seconds or a few minutes. You can do this once a day, multiple times a day. You can choose. If you have resistance to doing this practice, it's likely that doing it more often in the beginning can widen your window of tolerance to this exercise. And we'll talk more about that later. And we're especially going to talk a lot about that in the next workshop. So Alan Gordon says, when I first began leading patients in somatic tracking exercises, I noticed a common theme. While paying attention to their pain, many of them looked at it with intensity and a laser focus. They watched it like a hawk, and nothing about a hawk's burning gaze says safety. But there's another way to pay attention, a less intense way, like when you're enjoying a colorful sunset or lying in a field watching the clouds drift by overhead. You're still observing, but with a sense of effortlessness and curiosity. That's the kind of lightness we want to bring to somatic tracking. So we do this practice to notice and feel curiously, and that is it. It's not meant to get rid of sensation or pain or fix it. Although we've done this already in the group and in some of our group coaching calls, where when I'm working with one of you, you will have a sensation in your body, and the longer you're present with it, it naturally subsides, or it decreases in intensity, or it moves to a totally different part of your body. Several of you have had that experience already. So now let's shift into being more pleasure focused. This is my favorite part of this particular workshop. So remember, our symptom focused society, right? We're rating our symptoms on a scale of 1 to 10. We're creating food logs and journals about symptoms and possible triggers. We're getting pharmaceutical ads on TV that are promising to fix all of our symptoms while they cause a host of other side effects. We focus on symptoms when we seek out natural practitioners. We focus on supplements to fix or relieve our symptoms. We commiserate with others about our symptoms. We want validation or diagnosis for our symptoms. We want medications to suppress our symptoms. Symptom-focused society. But really, what if we were as pleasure-focused as we are symptom-focused? What if instead of keeping a log and rating symptoms from 1 to 10, we kept a log of all the ways we sought out pleasure and rated how that felt? Like, what if we kept a log of, like, I did this really pleasurable thing and here's the changes that I noticed later in my day, versus I ate this thing and this symptom happened, right? What if we started tracking our pleasure in the same way that we track our pain? It's no wonder we dissociate from our bodies. Most of us only know a painful relationship with our bodies, and our brains and nervous systems are not dumb. Dissociating, being disembodied, is protection. Except your brain and nervous system are protecting you from your own sensations because your own sensations are dysregulating and painful to feel. So think of what would be different in your life if your relationship with your body was not only based in pain. Okay, anxiety, grief, depression, etc. Those are all pain in their own way. I'm not just talking about physical pain. I'm talking about emotional pain too. What would your relationship with your body if that was happening? Do you think that a pleasure-based relationship with your body is as dysregulating or threatening to your brain and nervous system as all of the pain? Like, do you think that that would be as dysregulating? Maybe this is not registering or tracking right now because you like can't wrap your head around it. That's okay. Could you be open to the possibility that your relationship with your body could be based in pleasure, or at least that you could have room for pleasure alongside pain? Are you just, oh, could you be open to the possibility, even if it doesn't feel possible today? Okay, voices in your head. But what if I have a diagnosed condition? But what if I have chronic pain or chronic fatigue? But what if I'm anxious or depressed? But what if I'm disabled? But what if I have an autoimmune illness or other health condition? If you're having any but what ifs like pop into your head as I'm like, what if you could be with pleasure and pain? Or what if you could have a more pleasure focused relationship with your body? And the voice in your head is creating these objections. Okay. Switch the but what if to even if. Right? Even if I have a diagnosed condition that's really painful, even if I have chronic pain or chronic fatigue, even if I'm anxious or depressed, even if I'm disabled, even if I have an autoimmune illness or other health condition, you can still experience pleasure. Yes? Like, even if you have those things going on, you are still capable of feeling pleasure. You could still enjoy a massage or a foot rub. You could still love the sensation of slowly rubbing lotion on your hands or your body. You could still relish the scent of your coffee or your tea and slowly sip it and just be really present while you're sipping it. You could still give yourself extra time in a shower that feels really good. You can still admire a sunset. You can feel the softness of a sheepskin rug. You can give yourself the tingles when you brush your hair or ask someone else to brush your hair for you to give you the tingles, or like, I like it whenever like somebody like rubs my back really slowly and that gives me the tingles. I could still do all of those things, even if I'm really anxious, even if I'm in pain, even if I'm in grief, I can still do those things. You are able to connect with your body in pleasurable ways if you choose to do so. And honestly, the problem is that a lot of us, it's not that we can't, is that we won't. We choose not to connect to our bodies in pleasurable ways, even if we would say, well, I'm not choosing that. Yes, you are. An unconscious choice is still a choice. So focusing on pain, physical or emotional pain, is dysregulating to your nervous system. It elevates cortisol, which leads to inflammation, a weaker immune system, sleep issues, imbalances in insulin, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, which will create hormone and blood sugar issues, and weight gain, which leads to a slower metabolism. Orienting to pleasure, however, reduces dysregulation. And when you reduce dysregulation, you reduce cortisol. When you reduce cortisol and other inflammatory stress hormones, the body can return to allostasis and then homeostasis because the nervous system isn't signaling to the adrenal glands to pump out cortisol and adrenaline all the time. When stress hormones go down, inflammation goes down, immune function goes up, hormones balance, blood sugar balances, weight balances, and sleep and digestion improve. Please do not think that simple acts of pleasure done slowly and consistently can't or won't heal. Like, please don't be like, it can't be that simple. It can. This is how we heal. We need to remain in awareness about patterns of focusing on pain and symptoms while neglecting pleasure and reorient. Consciously choose pleasure. Your nervous system and your stress hormones get a break every time you choose pleasure. And that adds up over time. Like, you can start making deposits in the bank of pleasure, and that is going to add up over time and create less dysregulation in your nervous system. Okay, so take a deep breath and make this conscious. I have been conditioned to focus on symptoms and pain and to fear the sensations of my body. I have been conditioned to focus on symptoms and pain and to fear the sensations of my body. Okay, the unconscious has now been made conscious. Nobody can go around and not know this anymore. We have now made it conscious. So now that you know that the fear of being in your body and feeling sensation is something that we've all been conditioned out of, that reorienting to pleasure is something that we've been conditioned out of, especially as women, can you be even more open to the possibility that your relationship with your body could include pleasure along with pain? Can you be open to the possibility that you can choose pleasure, that both are possible and they can coexist and it's not either or? I don't know how you can have a diagnosed mental illness like health anxiety disorder or hypochondria when the entities that conditioned you to focus on what feels bad are the very same entities that keep trying to sell you the means by which to fix what feels bad. Like, I do not know how that is a diagnosable condition. The same people that create the problem create the pill, right? Like, that's fucked up. We've all been conditioned to focus on what feels bad. So we don't know how to focus on what feels good. But with this awareness, we can choose. We can choose to invite in more pleasure. We can choose to prioritize and make time for pleasure, to find new ways to experience pleasure, to go as deep into pleasure as we go into our pain. Hello. Can you go that deep into feeling good as you can into feeling like shit? We can choose to reconnect with our bodies through pleasure instead of through pain. If the unconscious choice is symptom focused, catastrophizing, diagnosing, practitioner hopping, medicating, etc., what if instead we take the awareness of all of this and consciously choose to focus more on pleasure? Take all the energy that it takes to focus on symptoms, to catastrophize, to Google, to try to diagnose yourself, to research, to hop from practitioner to practitioner, to try to fix, micromanage, get rid of your symptoms and your body and all of that. Take all of that energy, direct it to pleasure. Like, that's literally what I'm telling you to Your pain is still allowed to be there. I know you might want it gone, but that's not the goal. It might be something that happens, though. I've seen that happen a bunch when people start reorienting to pleasure. It's like somehow magically their bodies don't need to start be alerting them all the time through emotional or physical pain. We are not trying to fix, suppress, or get rid of anything, not through pleasure. We are opening to the possibility of experiencing both pain and pleasure, not either or. Just the possibility that I can have a full human experience with a wide range of emotional and physical experiences that include pain and pleasure. So let's see what it's like to drop our judgments, our eye rolling that this is too simple to work, grumbling that we've tried everything, conditioning to focus on pain. Like, let's go there together. Let's be curious. I know you've tried everything. I know nothing has worked. I know this sounds too simple. I know, okay, but I almost could guarantee you that no one in this room has ever done a full-on shift from focusing on pain and fixing to what feels good. Like, I bet you that's something that you have not tried. And it may sound too simple to be true, but let's get curious. So pleasure allows us to reconnect with and inhabit our bodies. We can be embodied when we feel good. When we pair connecting with our bodies through pleasure instead of pain and suffering, we repattern and show our brains and nervous system that being in the body and feeling are safe. Okay, you have to start having some disconfirming experiences so that not everything is focused on pain. Then it becomes safe to drop into the body and to feel, and you can cultivate that relationship of trust and connection with your body. If your pattern with your body is constant stress response and nervous system activation because you're so worried about and focused on pain and symptoms, of course you don't want to be in your body. It makes sense why you are disembodied. This can be repatterned through pleasure. If we are only ever focused on pain, physical or emotional pain, relationship pain, money pain, whatever pain it is, then our relationships with our bodies is a painful relationship. If we can invite in more pleasure, we can start to balance our relationships with our bodies so that it's not only pain focused. So let's stop trying to go so deeply into our pain when we haven't actually connected with our bodies through pleasure. When pleasure becomes safe, we can gradually introduce noticing and feeling pain, and it can become safe too. If the pain is psychosomatic, meaning there's not a physical reason that you're having pain, it is an emotional manifestation of a symptom or of a sensation because of trauma, it is possible that it could reduce or resolve on its own because it was simply there to get your attention and reunite you with your body. As you're noticing, it may be helpful to remind yourself of what overcoming health anxiety or any other anxiety actually means. And it doesn't mean having a symptom-free existence. Overcoming anxiety of any kind doesn't mean having a perfect existence with nothing to worry about. You are overcoming health anxiety if you are changing, even slowly, the energy with which you approach your healthcare. You are overcoming health anxiety if you are checking in less with your body, or if when you do check in with your body, you can notice, oh, okay, the sensation is still there, but I'm okay. Like, even though it's still there, I'm okay. You are overcoming health anxiety if you're confronting your resistance, your stories, and your attachments. If you're relating with your body with pleasure just as much, if not more, than with pain. If you're aware of how you have imposed perfectionism on your body. You're overcoming health anxiety if you're accepting whatever is present in your body without resistance. And if your window of tolerance for pain and discomfort is widening. All right. That is the end of our workshop. Let's take a 5-minute break. We'll come back at 1:30 on the dot, and we will dive into our Q&A. So see you in a few minutes.